on SEN, Dwayne's World on Christmas Day with Dwayne Russell.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell.
Welcome to the Christmas Day edition of Dwayne's World. I hope you're having a great day from wherever in the world you might be listening on your Christmas Day. Over the course of today, we'll relive some of the best moments and interviews from throughout the year. We start today with my chat with Boomers and NBA star Patty Mills, who joined me for an extended chat in August after carrying the flag at the Tokyo Olympics and being central to the Boomers securing their first Olympic medal. Here's Patty Mills.
Yeah, straight up to the family, mate. Mum and Dad, who I haven't seen in about 2 years, probably over 2 years. And also my wife, who's up there too. So I haven't seen her in a couple of months. So put in some hard yards over the last few months, but I'm looking forward to getting up there with them.
What have you been doing for the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, look, it's funny you ask because, you know, you can imagine how focused and how much your head is buried in the sand when it comes to a major tournament like the Olympics, and for us trying to win this elusive medal that we've been trying to get for so long, it's been hard to kind of come out of that. So quarantine has been a good job, you know, a good environment, I guess, for me to be able to rest and recover, obviously let the body kind of get back to normal, and the opportunity to soak it all in too.
You're already an NBA championship winner, but I presume this is the highest of your highs, that this is the greatest achievement, that given you carried the flag in, all of Australia was watching, how much team means to you, how much the Boomers mean to you?
Yeah, look, they're both at the top of their respected category. The NBA is obviously the best basketball competition in the world, but there is, you know, quite a bit more meaning when it comes to me representing my country. And I think being able to, you know, be the first Indigenous person to carry the flag for our country and win a medal in the same Olympics, I think it's pretty hard to top that.
42 points against Slovenia as well at a critical stage. I mean, history is littered with great performances and performances that weren't so great in key moments. This was a key moment in basketball history for Australia, and you were able to provide that kind of performance and leadership. So I know it was important to you, but how do you produce it? It's important to a lot of people, but they can't get it done.
How do you produce it, mate? I don't think I'll be able to answer that question. I think that's, you know, I can give you the answers of the hard work and the, you know, do this and do that and professional, you know, but I think there was a time in that moment of the game against Slovenia where I don't know where all of that came from. And the only thing that I can refer back to is, you know, the connection that I have to my country and my culture and the belief of all things that I was brought up on. Because, you know, it felt like my skinny little legs didn't have any juice in them, although they were still running, they were still getting up and down the court and managing to put the ball in the basket. So, look, I think it does come back to that belief of culture within our group and our team and what we've been able to build. And I think that carried us over the line.
And it obviously is important to you, the history of your mum and dad and where Australia's been and where we're trying to get to and your role in all of that.
Yeah, look, I always mention this, that, you know, what I've been able to do over my career of sports won't ever match up to the work that my parents have done for the country in respect to Indigenous communities throughout Australia and being able to, you know, better the lives of Indigenous people. So I think, you know, it runs in the family of being able to give back and look after your community. But I think I've just tried to do it in the best way that I could, given the environment and career path that I've chosen. So at the end of the day, I think it's all about, you know, everyone coming together and being as one as Australian. And I think that's what I carry when I put on the green and gold.
And family history all the way back, Eddie Mabo, and it's a connection that is with you in so many different, really tight ways. It's in your blood.
Oh, it's definitely in my blood. It's very deep. You can peel back all the layers and you'll spend a long time peeling them back before you get to the core of it. But you're right, it is in the blood. And I think that my time away from Australia has just brought me closer to it and that connection. And it's times like these, right? Like, I couldn't imagine myself winning an Olympic medal and not coming back to Australia to be able to touch home base and hand deliver an Olympic medal to my family. So I think it's things like that that I crave and that I need, and for a new chapter in my life, give me the energy to be able to go back and go to work.
And you've helped re-establish, set a new foundation of Boomer culture as well, which is so important to everybody who's ever represented Australia in basketball.
Yeah, of course. And I think it's important for our group, the current group, to be able to finally get on the Olympic podium and be able to acknowledge the past and what's being able to, allow us to play basketball in this country, and also put, the program in a position for the future as well. So, again, it's culture and it's stuff that I never invented. We never invented. We were just able to piece it all together and understand the meanings of what it means to be a Boomer and represent Australia and all that. And I think that's a good starting point for a lot of people.
But you play it down. The leadership is in you. Greg Popovich has talked about it. That's been part of what you've given San Antonio for a long period of time. You're now going to Brooklyn, and that's going to be a new chapter of your life. But the leadership is something that we've been told that you've always had, and you've always thought that was part of what you can bring to the game, bring to life for all those people who want to follow Patty Mills now.
Yeah, mate, it's something that I take a lot of pride in, and, whether it's, in my family, in the community, on certain teams, like it's a place that I feel comfortable in. And I think that was, that was shown obviously in this Olympics, but it's been a characteristic of mine for a long time, no matter if it's on the basketball court or off it. And just pleased to be in a position where, I can have an effect on teammates and on a greater Australian team, and to my, always to my shock is other people throughout Australia as well.
So Brooklyn, new chapter of your life. You're about to head over there and start that. You've got to come home first. Well, you're home, but head home. And then it starts all over again for you.
Yeah, mate, this is an interesting time in the career, a big career change, going from an island boy to a Texas country boy and now to the concrete jungle. So, look, it is exciting, and, obviously spending so much time in Texas, there's great admiration for, that place and being able to welcome me into their home, and now off to Brooklyn. So it's a new chapter. I think it is a fresh start, obviously, and coming off the Olympics is good timing and all that. But I'm looking forward to it, mate. It should be very exciting.
Did you have a chat to Kevin Durant during your time at the Olympics, or have you had a long-term relationship with these guys? They're iconic names when you talk about playing with Durant and talking about Harden and Kyrie. This is one hell of a team you're getting together.
Yeah, mate. And I haven't been able to put my head in a place of really understanding the opportunities that lay ahead for us, like an NBA championship, but I did manage to talk to Kevin, and what I found out, he's such a genuine, real person. There's no BS about him, and when I talk basketball with him, he's that pure hooper, as we like to call it. He loves the game, he loves speaking about the game, and that's something that I was drawn automatically to. So to be able to have those conversations, with him, and then, share a cool little moment after we had both been awarded our medals, was pretty cool. But again, I'm looking forward to, after having my family time and enjoying what, the goodness about being in Australia again, I'm looking forward to getting over there.
And is he the best player in the world as it stands right now, do you think, Kevin Durant?
Oh, there's no question, mate. don't know if you saw our game against USA, but he beat us, himself. And, you know, it's one of those things, right? It's sports. And when you play against a team who has the best player in the world and the best coach in the world, and you get beaten by them, they go and win the gold medal. I mean, it's hard to swallow, but you understand why. So, you know, to know that I'll be joining forces with them and know that I've got a big part to play in their future, in our future of the next season, that's pretty exciting enough.
So I was only going to think about all the positives, but you've taken me to one spot. Let me just quickly go back there. When you were beaten by the US, tough time for you guys. You had to quickly get back on track and make sure that you didn't let that knock you around too much because when they started playing, I mean, they just wiped you off the court. So there must have been a time when you guys were able to flip it and say, right, nothing but looking forward.
Yeah, of course, mate. You can imagine the disappointment. I mean, we've been working for this for so long. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said that there weren't tears in the locker room by guys because we had something that we were trying to go after. But, you know, to be honest, it was all Gorge, our head coach, Brian Gorge, and that was able to really take control of the ship at that point. And he smacked the disappointment out of the air in that locker room immediately after the game. And I also think it's experience of us leadership boys who have been in that position a couple of times now. And it was, you know, guys like that who understood, like, we're not going to let this happen again, you know, and that determination to know, you know, what we're trying to achieve here. And that's an Olympic medal for the first time ever. And, you know, that follow-up, I think, is one of the hardest things to do. And we were able to do it.
And it's only 3 years until the next one. So I presume that's also still there for you guys to keep in touch with each other, make sure that you keep that spirit together. I presume you've been doing it anyway, because they tell me you left, right and centre were calling people even a year before this Olympics campaign, Ben Simmons included. So I presume you're going to try and get him involved next time.
Well, it's a good thing you say that, because it is what's so special about our group and our groups that's been coming through. But being able to keep that consistent connection, not only within the group, but, you know, with Australia. So we've got our traditions that we've been able to put in place that mean a lot to our group, to make sure that we do keep in touch. You know, basketball, we all play all around the world, in the NBA, in Europe, here in Australia, even the coaching staff as well. You know, you wish you're able to be together more and play on home soil, just like the Wallabies and the Socceroos and the cricket teams, you know, but the fact is we aren't able to do that. So, you know, finding things like being able to, you know, adopt a kangaroo and see how they grow up, you know, stuff like that, I think is really cool. That will tie us together.
And you could have played AFL before I let you go. You'd no regrets there. You could have had a good career just playing this little game we play here in Australia.
Oh, I don't know if I could have played, mate. I mean, if you're talking about the backyard and, you know, down the park with a few family and friends, maybe that. But, you know, I still got my footy that I have with me in my locker. Well, I don't know if it's still there, because I probably would have packed up my locker in San Antonio by now. So hopefully they can get it to me. But, yeah, look, it's stuff like that, right, that I'm able to keep in touch with and stay connected to home.
Have you spoken to Eddie Betts recently? Do you speak to Eddie? Your fight against racism is something that needs to be mentioned, brought to the forefront, because it's been a fight that's been an ongoing fight for a long, long time in Australia and around the world. I presume you're in touch with what's happened in Australia in the AFL in recent times.
Yeah, I have a lot of admiration and, you know, just a lot of, you know, to be able to see, you know, what Eddie has gone through throughout the course of his career. You know, we stay in touch when I'm over in America, and to see, you know, the recent news and him retiring, you know, it's you know, just the admiration, I guess, to know, you know, how strong he has to be able to go through his career and, you know, deal with certain things that, you know, really has nothing to do with footy. But he, you know, we've stayed in touch throughout our campaign of We Got You, and I know he has a good support network around him that has helped him be strong throughout all of this. But you know, it's one of those things again that, you know, it keeps us, you know, closer together in some respects when things like this happen to help each other through.
Paddy Mills there. This is the Dwayne's World Christmas Day Special.
On SEN, Dwayne's World on Christmas Day with Dwayne Russell.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell.
Welcome back to the Dwayne's World Christmas Day Special. I spoke with Melbourne CEO Gary Peart in late September in the days after the club broke its long-standing premiership drought. Here's Gary Peart.
Great. Thanks very much, Dwayne. Well, and I must say, I haven't watched the replay. I haven't had time. And that was the first time I realised that Tom McDonald kicked a goal after the siren. I think I was in another world when we got to that point. That's the first time I've realised.
So talk me through the closing minute or minutes and the mayhem, or where you were, who you embraced, how you went about to soaking it up.
Well, I was sitting in the stand with Gary Lyon because we were both at the AFL's corporate function in the last quarter when we kicked two or three goals in a row. And Gary just, he grabbed my leg and I just said to him, "Gaz, you're about to hand the Premiership Cup to Goody and Gorney and we're going to be premiers." And you know what? We just sat there and Gary probably doesn't want me to say this, but the two of us just broke down and cried. You know, it was just an amazing moment, and you just think about all the people back in Melbourne that were sitting in their lounge rooms watching, that have been hoping for this for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. And, yeah, it was certainly an emotional time for everyone.
You took over as Melbourne CEO. The club was sort of, you know, going through. It was rough waters for Melbourne that you had to navigate through, and you're part of a large team, but you're still the top of the large team. You've got to get it right. So what do you think you got right now looking back on it?
Well, really, I think, you know, right across the board, you've got to put the fundamentals in place. And, you know, we quite clearly we said that we want to be performing better on field. We want to be more consistent. And then we also want to take that opportunity to grow the club. So we've got to grow the membership. We've got to grow our retail and grow the club into a bigger, more successful version of what it's been for a long time. And so there's a lot off field. We've, you know, got new executives into the team. Obviously, at the end of last year, we made quite a few changes to the footy department. And we knew we had this magnificently talented player list. Goody was an evolving coach that has really had great connection with the players. And we just wanted to make sure we put the right people and the right programs around Goody and the players to give ourselves a chance to do exactly what we ended up doing.
And I've got no doubt you were thinking about all the people back home, but was there a moment when you were downstairs with the players when the siren sounded, where you just became the ex-footballer again, the kid again, just realising that, you know, the basic part of footy is winning flags and that feeling when the siren goes and you've got one?
Yeah, look, I must admit, as soon as I realised it was going to be too late for the Bulldogs to come back and this was real, really, I spent the whole time, you know, just thinking of the fact the players will be introduced for the rest of their lives as Melbourne Premiership players. Goody gets to celebrate, you know, Coach of the Year and now a Premiership and deserves that recognition. And the whole club, but it really was, it just absorbed me and was emotional every single time I thought about it. The supporters that would have loved to have been there, and how bizarre it was that after, in some cases, 50-plus years where they've dreamed of a premiership and it was played in a state and they couldn't even attend. And, you know, that was something that absorbed me from that point, really, for the whole night.
So could that actually be a theme in this coming season? Let's stay up the top because the Melbourne fans deserve to see you do it at the G.
Oh, look, I think every club in this situation is going to be thinking that. And You know, I'd love to think that, you know, we've got this young list. We had 8 of our players 21 or younger. And even our prime movers, that the superstars are only in their mid-20s. And you know, it's such a difficult competition. This is a high-performance environment, elite sports. But there's no doubt that we'll be wanting to fight tooth and nail next year or every single game to try and get back to the MCG to play a grand final in front of the supporters that deserve to be there face-to-face and be able to experience that with us. So there's no doubt that that will be part of our plans.
I'm sure that it's a hot ticket, your unfurling of the flag game. Do you know when it might be or when you might ask for it to be or what round, one or two? Do you think the AFL could deliver something for you that you're after?
Look, it's very early and, you know, I've talked to the AFL about the fact that that's obviously a conversation we've got to have. But the AFL's in the phase of wrapping up their year. We're doing the same and these are conversations we'll have over the next couple of weeks. But we just want to make sure that it's a special experience. We're not able to come back to Melbourne and share the cup with our fans at the moment because of the COVID restrictions. But, you know, we'll work with the state government and as soon as it's possible that we can get back and have a crowd. The MCC are really keen for us to come along and do something special and bring the cup, get everyone down there, sign autographs, take photos, just shake hands, hug each other and the club getting back together. And this is what footy clubs are all about. So as soon as we can, we'll be back there and we'll be pulling the whole club back together again.
So you're talking about an open club family day at the G, if you can, before the season even starts? Or are you talking about your round one or round two unfurling day and night?
No, the day that the government lets us pull that together and, you know, our players are having a break at the moment, obviously, well-deserved. But as soon as we're allowed, they all come back at the start of December. And we'd be really hoping that, you know, there'll be a scenario close to that point that when the players and coaches are back, that we can, as soon as we can, we'll be getting the club together and bringing the cup. You know, quite clearly, the cup will be on tour. We don't care how long it takes. Any Melbourne supporter that wants to get a photo with the cup or be in the same room as the cup and experience of this, the players have won this for the supporters and they're very conscious of that. So these are all the things that we've literally been planning out today on how we're going to be able to do it. But the number one thing that'll dictate that is the COVID restrictions.
When would you like your unfurling to be? What slot would you ask for if you get to ask for one?
Oh, look, you know, there's a couple of different scenarios. And again, it's going to have to fit with the AFL. But all we've said, and the AFL accepts this, that under the circumstances, we want to make sure it's special. And, you know, we'll talk to our supporters as that unfolds and make sure that they've got something to look forward to. But again, we'll be making sure that it's the biggest occasion we can think of and it's something that they'll remember for the rest of their lives.
How big can your club be, Gary?
Well, you know, as you know, everyone knows, we were one of the biggest, if not the biggest club for the first 100 years of the competition, a powerhouse, you know, highly successful club. And we've, you know, a lot of new teams have come in and they've been very successful on field and grown into the size of 100 plus members. There's no doubt that we want to get to a point where we're the biggest and best and most successful version of ourselves on and off the field. And, you know, I would think if we can maintain our performance on field where the momentum's at the moment, we'll be looking at pushing into, you know, the mid-60s in our membership and wanting to get, as part of our four-year plan, we said we'd get to 75,000 members. We want to be playing in front of average crowds at the MCG, you know, average crowds of sort of 40, 50 in blockbuster games getting into the 80s. So, you know, when we're at that point, the supporters will be, the D supporters will be knowing that we're a successful and significant club, and that's well and truly in our strategic plan.
You're the CEO, so you've got to look at it with a little bit of a financial eye. Can you measure what this is going to be worth to you? How's your merchandise sales going? Does it mean your new home base gets fast-tracked? What could it mean for you?
Oh, look, it's substantial, and again, you've seen this play out each year. You get a benefit in the year that you're in, mainly in that merchandise retail space. And to put that in perspective, since we've made the finals, in the last month, we've sold, as of today, we've sold around about $2.6 million worth of merchandise and memorabilia, and that's 3 years. That's over 3 years worth of merchandise just in the last month. And our supporters just keep on sending messages through about how proud they are, and they want to wear the colours, they want to wear the apparel, not only to the games, they want to wear it around the streets and be able to recognise each other. So that's a big impact straight away. You obviously get the prize money. That's about $1.2 million, and half goes to the players and half goes to the club. And next year, the big opportunity, and we're going to work really hard on this, is to, you know, get all our supporters, members that were members that have left because they might have been disappointed or frustrated. We want to go out and find all our existing members and our previous members and all our new supporters, and make sure we sign them up and they're members and connected to the club. And there'll be a real focus on the kids too. We've got a pretty big hole in the middle of our membership where kids over the last 10, 15 years haven't really wanted to wear the jumper at Auskick or round, and their friends might tease them because their team might have been on top of the ladder or whatever, and they've disappeared to other clubs. So we want to really re-engage those kids back to the club. So lots of opportunities, and we want to really set ourselves with this list and with Goody to be performing at a really high competitive level for the next 4, 5, 6 years. So while that's going to be tough, that's what the club needs to maintain that growth.
Melbourne CEO Gary Peart there after the club won the 2021 AFL Premiership. This is the Dwayne's World Christmas Day Special.
On SEN, Dwayne's World on Christmas Day with Dwayne Russell.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock. Jingle bell.
Welcome back to the Dwayne's World Christmas Day Special. In November, I was taking calls on the top 10 Australian cricketers of all time when List Doyen and legendary journalist Mike Sheehan decided to call in and put forward his own top 20. Here's Mike Sheehan. Yes.
I was driving down to Toronto and I heard you discussing the List ethos, and I thought, oh, that's nice. And then the more you talked about it, and the more time I had to think in the car, I watched a lot of cricket over my life, and I thought, well, I might just send Dwayne a list of my top 10 and he can finish his program with it.
Oh, that'd be beautiful. We'll take some calls on it as well. You're not going down there to annoy an old friend of mine, Mark Williamson, down there, the pro at the Sereno Golf Club, are you? Mike, you've been picking up, what have you been doing down there?
Mark, I know, mate. No, I'm just down here just reclining, and I'm a few of your mates are on a golf weekend, Reno, this weekend. So they're playing at St Andrews, and I'll see them tonight, perhaps at the Sorinel Hotel, and then maybe have a meal after that.
It sounds like a lot of fun. All right, the lines are open. You can respond on the text or give us a call, 1-300-736-736. Here it is. No list is complete unless you call it the Mike Sheehan. It's not the top 50 Aussie cricketers of all time. It's the top 10 from Mike. You're going to take us from number 10, Mike?
I'll go the other way. I'll go... The most predictable one is number one, isn't it? It's the Don. So my top five, let's do it. The top five are Bradman, Warne, Lilly, Gilchrist, McGrath, and then Ponting. That's six, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yep.
Yeah. Now, the bottom four can go in any order. My list is fundamentally of people that I've seen with a few that I've read about. Then I've got Neil Harvey and Alan Davidson. You check Alan Davidson's figures. They're amazingly good. And I haven't heard his name mentioned during your discussion. So that's eight. And then I can't have a list of Aussie's best without Border in it. It's nine. And I finish with Greg Chappell.
So Greg Chappell over Ian. There's been a few that have put Ian over Greg. Talk me through, or talk for those people who didn't see them both. They were pretty different as players, weren't they? Different men, different
they
players.
Were. Yeah, in footy terms, mate, Ian was the inside player, but I think that probably is unfair to Greg. Greg could sort of work his way through tough situations, but Ian revelled in them. But Greg was the more classical player. So, Greg, I think, was the more complete player, so that's why I went with him.
Why did you go Warne ahead of Lilly? Because you would have been watching cricket in that era where Dennis Lilly was the biggest sports person on the planet as far as we were concerned as Aussies at one stage.
That's probably true, but so was Warne in Warne's heyday.
Yeah. I mean,
Warne was more so than Dennis, I think, because Warne sort of crossed all the boundaries. And, I mean, all the celebrities wanted Warne in their world, didn't they? I know. I'm a massive Lilly fan, but I think I remember several times watching Warne and sort of saying, he's the best cricketer I've ever seen. Now, I didn't see Bradman. But the people that I saw live, I think Warne's the best that I've ever seen. And that's it. And
did
that's
you rate
out, included.
Did you rate Alan Border that high because of who he had to make his runs against?
Yes, exactly. I mean, when their backs were to the wall, I mean, there was no... the pitches were a bit sort of juicier than they are now, and the West Indies had that sort of pace battery, I think that Border has to be in a best 10.
So Gilchrist changed cricket a bit, Mike. So is that why you've got him high? It's not just because I presume you don't think his keeping was that much better than, say, Ian Healy or even Rod Marsh, but in terms of his overall ability as a cricketer, is that why you've got him so high?
I think Gilchrist was in any Australian team of any era for his batting. He's the cleanest hitter of a cricket ball that I've ever seen.
Gee, that's saying something, because you've left some pretty good players out of your top 10.
I have, and I think people sort of make the point, we mightn't have been the best keeper of all. He probably may not have been the best keeper in pure terms, but there was nothing wrong with his keeping. He took some brilliant catches, and I think his batting, as I said, he would play in my batting lineup in any era that I've seen, and that covers 60 to 65 years.
Neither of the Wars, you didn't give Steve Waugh a run?
No, I didn't. As Dwayne, as I used to say every year when I brought that footy top 50 list out, you can't fit them all in.
Yep.
You tell me who you'd take out to put Steve Waugh in.
All right, let me take out Ponting then. Why did you put Ponting at six and you haven't got Steve Waugh in at all?
I think because of the flourish, because of Ricky. Ricky was good under the hammer too. Probably not quite as good as Steve Waugh in the trenches, but when he was in flight, he was a brilliant player to watch, wasn't he? And I think he probably covered, might have just shaded Steve in that area.
So take me back a bit, Mike. Who were some of the earliest cricketers? Because it's a hard thing to do, given that once upon a time there was only Test cricket, and it wasn't all year round. I mean, once upon a time you had to get on a boat to go and play it. So take us back to the era where there wasn't one-day form. Just before when World Series cricket came, there wasn't a person in Australia that wasn't glued to the TV to watch World Series cricket, the Super Tests and the one-days. It was just an iconic time of sport in Australia to be alive. But just prior to that, who were some of the greats that you saw back then that drew you to cricket?
Well, I think I'm talking about... I've got Neil Harvey in my list. Now, Neil Harvey was part of the Invincibles team that went to England in 48, made a century at 18, was a brilliant player. And I think he gets forgotten because Bradman was still in that team and there were so many guns that were around him, like Arthur Morris and those guys. But Harvey's figures, and I did see him firsthand, brilliant left-hander, little bloke, left-hander, classical. So he was one. Alan Davidson, if you check Alan Davidson's figures pipe, you'll be amazed at how good he was. Now, it's not all about figures, I understand that, but he played, in, as you're talking about in the era, he got his wickets and runs against the Poms, and I think he's got the lowest, the best bowling average for any bloke who took more than 200 wickets, I think. And he was a genuine all-rounder. Like he was, I'm guessing off the top of my head, he's probably, his batting average was in the 30s. Miller, we love K Keith Miller. I knew Keith. I interviewed Keith Miller. So wow. I loved him. But I think we sort of, the romance of Miller swayed a lot of people. Like his figures, Miller apparently, for those who knew him, just turned it on when he had to. I mean, sometimes he just didn't care. He'd go out and he'd just throw the bat around and might make 20 or 30 and be out. But when the crunch was on, he was at his best. But the Davidson figures, now I don't know them because I was in the car, but I suspect his figures are better than Miller's.
And of the modern day guys that missed out, I mean, you haven't put Steve Smith in, for example, you haven't put Dave Warner in. Who are the modern day guys that would be the highest on your list?
Probably Smith. I think there was a period, 18 months or 2 years before the sandpaper gate, I think we were talking about Smith being another Bradman. Now, that's the ultimate accolade, isn't it? You can't get any higher praise than that. And he hasn't lost his way since then. So he's probably the unluckiest one. The one that when I finished that list and I got to the bottom and thought, this bloke's not in it. God, I didn't think I could do a list without him in it being in it, was Doug Walters. When Doug Walters was a national hero.
He was. Everybody loved Doug. I was talking about Pat Cash earlier on. There was a time in Australian sport where these guys and girls weren't divisive. There's so many stars on the stage now that are divisive. You either like them or you don't like them and you hate them with a passion. There was an era in sport where you talk about Doug Walters, Lily, Pat Cash, where there wasn't any division at all. Everybody just loved them.
They were national heroes. Now, I'll tell you a quick story, Pipe, about Walters. I was covering an Australian cricket tour of New Zealand in, I think, 1976 or 77. And they were playing at Christchurch. And I think Dougie was 100 or 110 not out. We went back to the team motel. Dougie took a stool at the bar with his three packets of Rothmans and didn't move for the next 5 hours and went out next day and made another 150.
And I think like you at the front bar of the stuff.
If he had three packets of fags, I think he had 30 beers. So this was just a bloke who played, you know, cricket. Like when we grew up, cricket, you played it for fun, yep. And the good players just went out. They didn't care what their prep was like. They just went out and swung the bat and made runs or took wickets. And he was one of those.
Mike Sheehan, who made the top 50 famous, giving his top 10 Australian cricketers list there. This is the Dwayne's World Christmas Day special.
On SEN, Dwayne's World on Christmas Day with Dwayne Russell. Jingle bell, jingle
bell, jingle bell rock. Welcome back to the Dwayne's World Christmas Day special. Australian Chief Selector George Bailey joined me the day after the Australian men's T20 side won its first T20 World Cup. Here's George Bailey.
Yeah, cheers. It was a pretty exciting morning, wasn't it? Very, very happy for the boys and coaching staff over there.
So the way it unfolded as well... The score that they put together was pretty good. I watched it unfold as live. I got up at 6 this morning and sort of spent 2 hours watching it without looking at my phone overnight to see what the score was. And, you know, I was getting a bit worried they were going to put a bigger number up. I'm not sure they went for it as much as they could have in the last couple of overs, but the pitch did look like it was a bit sticky. What did you make of the target of 173? And were you a little worried at that stage, given the pitch was playing a few tricks?
I try not to get too wrapped up in how it's going at the halfway stage. I absolutely thought we'd done thought the bowlers did a particularly good job in the first 10 overs. I think New Zealand were at about 57. So even with some good acceleration from Kane Williamson and some decent finishing to get to 170, I thought that was okay. I mean, I guess the flip side of seeing a team accelerate like that at the back end of their innings shows that hopefully the wicket is reasonably good. I know Finchie, I know both teams were trying to downplay the importance of the toss, but historically, you know, even if it is minor, that little bit of dew coming in can sometimes make it easier in the second inning. So it was a good score. I guess it just came down to knowing that we needed one of our batsmen to stand up, and we're pretty fortunate to have not one, but two.
So let's talk about some names individually, George. Firstly, Adam Zampa, talking about the performance of our guys with the ball for the entire tournament. Adam Zampa's reliability and consistency throughout the tournament has you know, almost made him an icon of Australian bowling in recent times, given that we've now won a World Cup off the back of his brilliance.
Yeah, and I probably agree with Aaron Finch's sentiments there. I thought he, from our point of view, was our player of the tournament. I thought he was outstanding, so consistent, and that just allowed Finchie and the other bowlers to be so clear in how they wanted to use him. So hard for other teams to target him. So fantastic tournament, and he's been a very, very important member of our white ball teams for a number of years. Probably doesn't get huge accolades necessarily outside of that, but very, 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 very popular member. A bit of a different personality, but very diligent and very, very good member of the Australian cricket team. So great to see him have the tournament that he did.
And there's a couple of other guys who have changed the narrative. Probably not for you, but as far as cricket fans, cricket watchers, when they hear the name Dave Warner, when they hear the name Mitch Marsh, they've probably had other things conjured in their mind over recent years. But as of this morning, we're now going to think of the brilliance of Dave Warner, the brilliance of Mitch Marsh, and their brilliance bringing this cup home.
Yeah, if you weren't already thinking David Warner was brilliant, then I'd have to be questioning you a little bit there. I think he's one of the all-time greats of T20 cricket. His numbers suggest that, and for people to be questioning that after three or four misses with the bat is pretty extraordinary. It's as we've seen with the best teams over the years, you live and die by your ability to take the game on, and the best players continue to back themselves. So to see him come into the tournament and I think he only got 12 or something in the first game, but there was something about that 12 that suggested the intent and the way he was going to take the game on through the tournament was there. And so important. So many teams have a left-arm spinner that they utilise at back ends of power plays or through the middle, and Dave's ability to get through the power play and just, at times put the other team in a little bit of doubt as to whether they could use their spinner was really, really important. Mitch, just so, so happy for him. You will not find a more popular member, or a more passionate member in that Australian cricket team. We know he's talented, and for him to get the opportunity and deliver, and the whole innings, but the way he started that innings this morning, and that just would have taken the pressure off Dave, would have got everyone breathing back in the dugout, and just set the tone for what was a wonderful, wonderful innings. And I guess the other one I'd mention, I thought had an absolutely outstanding tournament was Josh Hazlewood, who has really come of age and probably always had the T20 skill set, but we just hadn't seen him play a great deal of back-to-back T20. So for him to have a great tour of the West Indies and Bangladesh, then come through and play such a pivotal role for Chennai in their tournament win in the lead-up, and then to have such a great World Cup was fantastic.
Yeah, 3 for 16 for those unaware in the game this morning, in the win this morning. A drop catch that we were all worried was going to cost us big time. Probably cost us a few runs, but it didn't cost us the victory, which was great. Where does it sit for some of the great things that Australian cricket has been able to achieve over time?
I think what's impressive is understanding how hard tournament play is and how hard it is to peak at the right time. So to see them play so well throughout the tournament, and in many respects save a couple of their best performances to last was absolutely fantastic.
Australian Chief Selector George Bailey there the day after Australia's historic Men's T20 World Cup win. That's it for the Dwayne's World Christmas Day special. Thanks for keeping me company during the course of Dwayne's World and a big year. I'll be back next year with more Dwayne's World and more Midday Madness, more importantly. Midday Madness back in 2022. You call, you get on. That's the Midday Madness promise. I'll catch you next year.